You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Beyond the darkness, beyond the human evolution, is Khan, a genetically superior tyrant. Exiled to a barren planet, banished by a starship commander he is destined to destroy. Left for dead, he has survived.
I'll chase him around the moons of Nibia and round the Antares maelstrom and round perdition's flames before I give him up.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Gina Versa.
Hey, how you doing?
Today we are going to be talking about Star Trek. And what I mean by Star Trek, we're only talking about the original series movies with William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy. And also for this, you know, retrospective, we are going to be talking about, we're going to be kind of celebrating The Wrath of Khan for its 35th anniversary. So, hooray, happy for 35th birthday. Wrath of Khan. So
awesome.
Cool. So to get everything started, Gene, what are your thoughts on Star Trek in general?
Well, Star Trek was something I kind of stumbled into as a fan. I started watching it like probably late teens. That's when the 2009 movie came back, the J.J. Abrams film, which, you know, despite, you know, its flaws and then some fans getting annoyed, you know, really reintroduced the franchise to like a new generation. Well, obviously to me, but started watching the originals. I watched Wrath of Khan first. I just watched it with no sort of context. Like I seen a few Star Trek episodes when I was younger, like I think they're on like G4 Tech TV or something. Dug it. But Wrath of Khan was like the first time, like, you know, made me really, really like these characters, like Kirk, Spock, McCoy. The Spock death scene really got to me. Actually, it's a little bit sadder now with Leonard Nimoy's death, but that's how I got into it. You know, just started reading about Star Trek after that. Eventually I watched the rest of the films. Just made me a Trekkie, more or less.
Cool. So for me, I am not a Trekkie or a Trekker at all. I've actually, just like a week ago, I had actually never seen any of the Star Trek movies other than the Abrams movies. And I did see Wrath of Khan like a couple years ago. But still, my knowledge of Star Trek, you know, is extremely limited. I think even more limited to what Abrams thinks he knows about the show. So it wasn't out of, I don't like despise Star Trek at all. It was just, it just never happened. Mm. It never happened to me the way like Star Wars and other space venture movies have. So,
I think Star Wars is just more accessible to people. Star Trek is like, you know, people compared like Star Wars is like space fantasy, and then like Star Trek is like, you know, science fiction. Star Trek, you know, it's just, I don't know, it has like for some people it's just a little difficult, or not difficult, but, you know, not as accessible, because there's, you know, all this backstory and all this like stuff you need to know, you know.
So. Right. I mean, here's the thing about Star Trek too, is that there is a lot of material out there. There's just all this content.
Yes.
I mean, there's over 50 years of content, and there's, I think now in the new series, I think there's now like 5 different TV shows.
Right. And 2 different timelines.
Yes. And there's, I'm blanking now. I think there's like 11 movies.
Let me see.
Might be wrong.
No, there's 12 with Star Trek Beyond.
Okay, all right. Yeah. There's just a lot of content. So...
Oh, there's 13 movies.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of content out there, and it's just, and it's kind of, you know, overwhelming for someone who is just starting out.
Right.
So, especially if you have not grown up with it. Like, if you had not seen it on Sci-Fi Channel in the early days, or just reruns in general, like, I mean, you just had to like have grown up with it, and I think that's the reason, and we'll talk about this in towards the end of the show.
Sure.
But I feel like one of the reasons why Star Trek has such a great following over the, or not like repeat generations continually to go, you know, to embrace, is because there is a lot. There's a lot out there for. Whereas Star Wars, we're at, I think now we're on 2 TV shows and 8 movies.
Right.
So I mean, that's a lot.
And a lot of books.
Oh, yeah, that too. I forget about books.
Right.
But
they're all out of continuity, most of them now, so.
Right. They're not in continuity. So really, I mean, really, it is just the 8 movies and the Clone Wars and Rebels is now finishing up.
Right. And Rogue One and all the spinoffs.
Yeah, well, that's included in the 8. Because episode 8 hasn't come out yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
You're fine. And so it's just interesting. It's just interesting that Star Trek has, you know, had so much content over the years, and but the popularity of it's still kind of like small little fandom,
right? Of course.
So I want to get into the first. So I want to transition into the first movie.
Okay.
The motion picture directed by one of the most like acclaimed directors, Robert Wise.
Yeah. The Day the Earth Stood Still. The Sound of Music. He did West Side Story. So yeah, he was a pretty, he had a director with a lot of range. So, I mean, he was, like, I think he gets like a lot of like flack for that movie, but I don't know. He was a pretty good choice, but yeah.
Yeah, if you're gonna get a sci-fi director to do Star Trek, why not get the guy who did The Earth Stood Still?
Right.
So I feel, watching the movie earlier last week, I didn't think it was that bad or poorly directed.
It's really well directed as a film. All the technical stuff, he did like really amazing work, like, you know, like how V'ger looks, or how you know, the ships look, or how the Enterprise is like redone for the movie. It looks amazing. Even, you know, the direction is really good too. All the character stuff is great. Like, I think, what's the scene with Kirk and Spock when they reconcile after he goes into the V'ger cloud, you know, that's a really good scene.
Earlier in the movie, there's a great scene with Bones and Kirk and the guy from Seventh Heaven.
Forgot he's in that movie.
Mm-hmm. He has a really good scene of where like Kirk is like, you know, why did you disobey me, like during this, you know, thing. And it was like, well, because you don't know the ship as well as you think you do, because we've done all these new things, and I know the ship better than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great moment because you realize Kirk is really competing with the new generation. The new generation of not the next generation of Star Trek, but he's competing with the future. He's competing with Yeah.
And that kind of goes with the themes of pretty much the whole series, which is like the Enterprise crew kind of like fighting their old age, you know, kind of struggling with being older, you know, what you see in like Wrath of Khan and, you know, Undiscovered Country. You see more of that throughout the throughout the series of films. So, yeah, that's a great scene.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I don't get the, and really we're in one of the things viewers you're going to, or listeners, you're going to, you know, understand is I really don't have a lot of problems with the odd numbered Star Trek movies.
Okay. I like most of them except Final Frontier, which I'm going to keep bagging on.
Yeah. We'll, we'll get on that train a little bit, but the thing I liked about the first one, and I'm sort of baffled/not surprised how they didn't like carry on, because the motion picture was still a successful movie.
Right. Yeah, it did well. I mean, they got a sequel, you know, I think it broke even, I want to say, but right. I think they had like a slightly decreased budget for Wrath of Khan. So, you know, yeah, it did. It still did well. Like, you know, the fans were still there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say a cool fact was for the motion picture, there was supposed to be a new series of Star Trek where it was called Star Trek Phase 2. And they were literally like, they photographed everyone, they casted everyone. And then I believe because Star Wars came out, A New Hope, which was just called Star Wars back then, the people at Paramount were like, oh, it's like, they're making a space movie. Let's make a space movie. We have Star Trek. Let's just do a movie of that. So everything got shuffled around and they were like, okay, just do a movie out of it. And I think the V'ger storyline was supposed to be like the first episode of the new series of Phase 2. But, you know, it was good because Phase 2 was not supposed to have Spock. Like, it was missing some characters in that series, if you look into it.
Right. So, well, I mean, even as that. Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that. But as we go in, but I mean, even as we open the movie, I mean, Spock is not with his original crew. Right. He's not.
Vulcan.
Yeah, he's in Vulcan doing a kind of a ritual of sorts, a traditional ritual.
He's trying to purge his emotions because, you know, Vulcans are all about logic, so.
Yeah, right, and he's half human.
And then he senses V'ger, but it's from Phase 2 in the motion picture. So.
All right. So.
I will say one more thing about the motion picture because I thought of a funny joke another editor friend said was like, you know, for the motion picture, you know, I enjoyed enough, but, you know, there are just some scenes that are just go on, I think, so long. And, you know, this editing friend was just, the pace in the movie is terrible. They're like, you know, you could walk out of the movie, go get a coffee, go for a walk, go for a drive, rob a bank, and then come back to the movie and you'll be at the same spot. You won't miss anything. So.
That is true. And to prove it, there's a scene where they're like transporting to the, like where Scotty and Bones and Kirk, they're transporting themselves to the Enterprise. And it's like a 10 or 15 minute scene of them just like looking at the Enterprise from the outside. And it's like new and like remodeled form. And it just goes on for 10 or 15 minutes. I went out and actually went to the restroom and I'm serious when I say this.
Okay.
I went out to the restroom and got more water and it wasn't even halfway done. I was just like, oh my God. Eventually I just had to like hit the fast forward button.
Yeah. I think they've actually, I want to say for a lot of re-releases for that movie, like the DVD or like on TV, they edited a lot of those sequences down from the original version of the original on, you know, that was shown on screen. So it was a lot longer originally. So, you know, we should all be grateful.
Oh my God. Like, I can't imagine it being any longer. Like, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some still like cool visual effects scenes, like Spock going into Verger and entering into Verger and exploring it and trying to mind meld. Like, those are really good stuff. but still it goes on way too long.
Yeah, and I just think the problem that movie is just stayed a Star Trek movie instead of trying to be something else, because that whole movie is trying to be 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know.
Right. And,
you know, that's cool, but you know, it kind of betrays the Star Trek roots a little bit.
Well, and also Kubrick is his own style. Kubrick does everything for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I love Kubrick.
Yeah, even if you don't agree with it, he's still doing things in his movies for a reason.
Yeah, and every shot of his has a purpose.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if... So to try and emulate Kubrick is not going to work in your favor, because it's just such a particular style, and he only does things because it's his personality, it's his vision, and it's his particular way of doing it.
Yeah, of course.
So it's odd that they decided to go more Kubrick, but for the next one, it's even more interesting because Wrath of Khan, not many people know this, but they only got like a third of the budget for the Wrath of Khan.
Yes, because they didn't want to spend as much as they did in the motion picture, which is understandable since, you know, that was a very high budgeted film.
It was. Yeah. The first one was a $35 million movie.
Yes.
And this one was like 11 to 12 million.
Yeah. I think for inflation, that would probably be maybe something like 200 million now or something.
For Star Trek the Motion Picture?
Yeah.
It would be a lot. I mean,
yeah. It would be a lot of money, more pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Star Trek.
Uh-huh. Keep going. Just keep talking about Wrath of Khan for a second.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Wrath of Khan is, I think, yeah, that's my favorite of the original series. And, you know, it's a lot of other fans, and you know, this is where Star Trek, the original series movies, really hit its stride, because they threw out Robert Wise and got Nicholas Meyer, and I want to say, I don't know, Nicholas Meyer didn't do too much before that. I think he did like one other movie that escapes me, but he really took that franchise by the cojones, more or less. And I want to say he kind of got Gene Roddenberry out, the original series creator, of the story room, and he kind of was just like, okay, I'm going to do my movie, stay out. Everything about that movie is just so well-crafted. When Nicholas Meyer talks about it, you know, his first idea was like he wanted all the space stuff and the crew of the new Enterprise to be like seafarers. So it'd be like a submarine, more or less, kind of sailing a bit. That movie's so great.
It is. And to add on, Nicholas Meyer, this was Nicholas Meyer's second movie.
Oh, okay. What was it? What was his first?
It was Time After Time, 1979, with Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that movie, but I heard it's good. He really put his whole heart and soul in that movie, because that's a great, and he wrote it, I believe, because he is a really good writer, Nicholas Meyer.
Yeah, he was he didn't get credit for it, but he didn't get credit for it, but he did write the script. He actually even he actually even rewrote the whole thing in two or three weeks.
Yeah, pretty much. Because I think the original concept was Gene Roddenberry's idea, which was something really stupid. It was they go back in time, the Enterprise, and I have no idea. People could look it up, but it was really dumb.
Yeah, and also the Wrath of Khan kind of introduced a new creative force for the series, which was Harve Bennett.
Oh yeah, he's a great producer.
and also a good writer. I mean, he also contributed to Wrath of Khan and worked on pretty much from 2 to 5. Like he was the Star Trek guy,
right?
Like the showrunner of it.
Yes, so, pretty much. Yeah, saved the franchise in a way.
He did, because I don't know if people would. I don't want to bash Gene Roddenberry, but I don't know if anyone would have stuck around for a sequel to another movie like the motion picture. I think they, in a way, I hate saying this. I think in a way they needed a blockbuster to kind of blockbuster Star Trek.
Right.
And not and I'm not referring to in like the J.J. Abrams way. I'm more like referring to they had to make it exciting, make it a little bit more action-esque, make it more, you know, character and story accessible. Driven. Right. Like Star Wars like Star Wars is.
Right.
And not so like deeply heavy on themes and cerebral ideas.
Yeah, definitely.
But my issue with Star Trek Wrath of Khan is because it got like such a lower budget, it really does show that.
It does a little bit.
I mean, the effects are not as bad as something like The Final Frontier.
Yeah, those are unfinished, actually.
Oh, God.
They were supposed to give it to some, I think it was like ILM or something. And they couldn't do it, so they like outsourced it to like some really like random special effects company that didn't even like finish some of them. So like all the shots were they barely made them, and I think probably some are unfinished in Final Frontier. But I think the effects in Wrath of Khan, you know, they aren't as good, but you know, just the story and just like the characters and like the emotions of that movie just really just keep you watching and keep you interested, you know. Because that's like, you know, that film is just, you know, about Kirk and Spock's relationship. You know, their friendship is just like this thing that has lasted like, you know, 50 years, 2 universes, you know. You know, that's the heart of the series, you know.
Right. Sorry, I'm going in and out. Like, there's some people touring my studio.
Oh, it's fine.
Or not my studio, the school studio.
Right. No, it's cool if they're, we could just listen to us talk about Star Trek and geek out.
Yeah. So, unexpected visitors, but yeah. So
I almost said hi.
They already left.
Oh, okay. Never
mind.
What were you gonna say about Wrath of Khan?
It's a solid movie. I mean, it's still like, you know, the way, the way Kirk's mind works to get himself out of every situation.
Oh yeah.
Brilliant.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's, you know, where he talks about, he doesn't believe in the no win scenario about the Kobayashi Maru is just really, I think maybe an influence some of my own, like, you know, how I view stuff. Cause yeah. I love the Kobayashi Maru space where it's like, oh, how did you win? It's like, I didn't, I cheated. So, cause he did not believe in the concept of the exercise, which was I think it was to accept like failure, accept death, and he just did not buy that, you know. And that's a very good way of thinking sometimes.
And ultimately that's what the movie's about. It's about him confronting, you know, mortality and also the reality that, you know, not everyone will make it out. I mean, he's part of a military vessel. And so, you know, him losing Spock at the end of the movie,
right?
It's great. And his whole, like, you know, final lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the conversation that Spock and Kirk have at the end, it is touching. Like, it's, you know.
Still... Oh yeah, that scene gets me every time. Where it's, I think I could do it verbatim. Where it's like he goes down into the cockpit, or not the cockpit, the engineering room, and he's like, oh, it's like someone has to, you know, he's like, someone has to help him. He's like, it's like he'll die, and then it's like he's dead already. Which McCoy, not McCoy,
Scotty
tells him, and that line was supposed to be for McCoy, and then what's his name, the actor?
I don't know.
Forest Kelly was like, I don't want to do this line because this goes back to he's dead, Jim. And he's like, this would take away from the scene. So Scotty says, you know, he's dead already, which, you know, it's a powerful line. Kirk, like, you know, goes to that and, you know, he realizes his friend's dying, that he knows is like, you know, did the ship, you know, Spock's only, you know, he doesn't care about himself. He cares about the crew members, you know, the ship survive. And that's, you know, such a beautiful scene. You know, and Kirk, you know, tells him, or what does Spock say? It's like,
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Or the one. Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, that's Spock's, you see Spock's, because he never took the Kobayashi Maru, his solution to the problem, which is to sacrifice yourself. And, yeah, you know, that's that is also another, because Kirk's solution was to cheat, and then Spock's solution was to sacrifice himself. So, yeah, you know, just that scene also has, I think, more depth now with Nimoy's passing, you know. I don't know, just it gets me a little more.
So. Yeah, I mean, well, it's a beautiful piece of acting from Nimoy, and that's always, like, the best parts of these Star Trek movies is Nimoy still, like, giving, like, Oscar-worthy performance.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think, actually, William Shatner, too, is really great in that scene for this actor that gets, like, so much crap for, like, you know, being so overly dramatic and, like, you know, such a big performer. And that scene, he's very subdued. You know, he goes, like, he's just very quiet in that scene. And his last, like, no, his last little thing was, like, no. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just really, really, really touching because he doesn't go big for that scene. And I think Nicholas Meyer made a point to direct him that way, you know, because, yeah, Shatner's Shatner.
Yeah, Shatner is a very eccentric person, and yeah. I mean, even in the following scene, like when he's giving like the speech or the kind of the
out final of all say, the souls, yeah, all the souls I've encountered, his was the most human as his voice breaks. You know, that's awesome. And then they go into like Amazing Grace as is
with Scotty playing the pipes, and
oh, that's a great scene. Yeah. Yeah, Wrath of Khan is just, yeah, one of my favorite films. Not just Star Trek, but just in general, too.
Now, let me ask you this. I don't know if I kind of had to go in and out first. Did you talk about Ricardo Montalban?
No, I did not, which I really should. Yeah, because he is great in that film. You know, because, you know, I watched, you know, Space Seed, and, you know, Khan is great, but just the way he plays Khan in this movie is just incredible, more than the original series. You know, you have all his like little like speeches that he takes from Moby Dick, you know, from like Hell's Heart, I stab thee, you know, just all that is just so great. And this is disputed, and there is people have proven this. He bulked up for that role, and he was like 65. And that, like, that body and those abs, they're all real, because people keep insisting he wears, like, a prosthetic to make himself look buff. But that is not the case. So, just to clear that up with someone, a 65-year-old man got that buff for this role.
That's so impressive.
We have to commend that to him.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Ricardo Montalban died, and that was, like, really sad. And because he is just such a good character actor, and he really does give his 100%. Even when he's like sitting in the wheelchair for the Spy Kids movies, like he's still giving really good, solid performance.
Definitely. And the cool thing is, like, Kirk and Khan never meet in the film. Like, they're just on monitors, and actually they never met on set as well, because it was just done on two different, you know, their two sets were separate. So, like, you know, it's amazing how it comes across, the rivalry between them, you know.
I know, that's perfect. Like, that's really good directing, and it's a bold choice, because, you know, especially nowadays where almost every blockbuster, the hero and the villain, they have to have a big old boss battle. Mm-hmm. And in Wrath of Khan, it's like, no, they don't, it's a battle of the wits, and it's and they never they're never in the same room. So
yeah, definitely. And I love the final battle between them. Well, I mean, they do have the final battle in the Mutara Nebula, which is great. And it's, you know, goes back to Kirk's thinking is, oh, actually Spock suggests it. How they win is because it also, you know, goes back to Khan, how Ricardo Montalban plays him. He's a smart, brilliant person, but his fault, his failing is he loses because he, you know, his ego, which he believes he's better than everyone because he's a genetically modified super person or whatever. Right. And they lose because he does not, you know, he has 20th century thinking despite his adjustments. So he does not get, he does not grasp the concept of space battles, which is he sees them as like boats, and they're not boats, you know, like seafarers, like, you know, how boats would fight like pirates or something. It's not a boat battle. It's like a submarine battle because, you know, in space you could go down, you could go up, you know, you could go any sort of, you know, you could go up, down, sideways, and he does not grasp that concept in the film. So I just point that out to people.
Well, and also, the, well, and also he's driven by revenge. Like he's driven by his
vengeance.
Cause I mean, even his, like one of his crewmates points out to him, like, we have a ship. Mm-hmm. We have the Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
We could just, yeah. we could just haul ass and just do whatever we want. We're free.
Yeah. And he does not, he does not listen to him. He's just consumed by vengeance, you know? And yeah, that's really great about Khan. You know, he's just, you know, pure vengeance, because his, from the original series, his like, I don't know if she's his wife or whatever. One of the crew members made it, you know, she dies on City Alpha 5, because they thought they sent them to City Alpha 6 because of all the, you know, they didn't have enough resources, and, you know, he blames Kirk for that. You know, just, you know, he's great. I love, his last scene, which is, you know, he does that, Moby Dick speech, which is brilliant. And then he makes, you know, Genesis go off. And that's, you know, that's really great. That's a great villain because, you know, he was already dying. You know, he could have just died, but, you know, he used his last, you know, breath to just, you know, really screw over the Enterprise. You know, because that, you know, that kills Spock, and, you know, that's like that was such a big like middle finger to Kirk, you know.
Right.
And yeah, that's great. Actually, you'll see his actions actually in that movie, because he never gets referenced again in the rest of the films. His actions actually have like these long foreseen consequences in the rest of the films, because that leads into 3, you know, getting Spock back. That leads into 4, and then in 6, actually, we'll talk about this later, but yeah, his actions have some sort of reference in 6. So great movie, just wrapping it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even throughout all, even like 5, like there's still like, you know, like there's still like, you know, the like friction between the Klingons and Kirk. So right. Because of what happens in 3.
Mm-hmm.
So
you want to go into 3 then?
Yeah, let's get into it. 3.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of 3? Because I have a couple opinions.
I really like 3. 3 gets a bad rap, but like, you know, Leonard Nimoy directed that. And you know, it's not a perfect film, but like, you know, just you know, it's you know, they're trying to revive Spock. You know, it's a very personal fight for the Enterprise crew. And, you know, it's really well directed. Christopher Lloyd is a great, great villain. I think he gets really, he doesn't get enough recognition as, I forgot the Klingon leader's name. What's it?
I will look it up.
Okay. Yeah. But Christopher Lloyd is great. Just, you know, the plot of the movie is, you know, interesting because it's the Enterprise going rogue from Starfleet because they hijack the Enterprise and no one will, you know, help them out to retrieve Spock. And, you know, it's, you know, it's really great. And I think the heart of the franchise, you know, again, it's Kirk and Spock, and that, you know, it's Kirk pretty much going to the ends of the earth to, you know, save his friend. Cause you know, it's, you know, that was, you know, he felt that was his obligation and his duty. That's a great film. And yeah, I really enjoy it.
Christopher Lloyd's character's name is Commander Krug.
Kurge.
Okay, yeah, Kurge.
That's great. Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering what your thoughts were on it.
Oh, my thoughts are, I don't understand why either it gets a bad rap. I mean, I can understand fans feeling a little bit like they were like cheated a little bit because Wrath of Khan ends on such a high emotional note and a nice send off for Spock. That I can understand fans going, what the fuck? Like,
right.
I can see, because I could see myself going, well, yeah. Well, what was the point? Like, what was the point of, you know, all this death if, you know, you're going to bring him back? Like, what was the whole point? But
right. Well, I mean, you know, it takes away from it a little bit than death scene, but that does, you know, it's a great death scene. But, you know, they set up Spock's resurrection in Wrath of Khan, if you watch closely, because, you know, you see him go to Dr. McCoy and he says, remember, and he mind melds with him. So, you know, that scene kind of planted a little bit of the seeds that he could be resurrected, you know?
I know. That's like one of the, I noticed that too, like on this viewing. The whole remember thing, and I really, yeah. I really, you know, like I, so I guess we probably maybe should have expected it, but
right,
I feel, but I do like, I do agree with fans that, you know, maybe it wasn't the wisest choice to bring Spock so quickly. However, right. I still really love the movie. Like, yeah. It's a really well made movie. There's a few things that don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still like a very well done Star Trek sequel with Kirk's son David dying, which is
that's a sad scene.
It is. I mean, it is. I mean, because it, you know, for Kirk, it's like he finally he met his son in the second movie, and he had to, you know, and he thought he was in good hands by leaving him on Genesis until he got back to Earth and heard about essentially the galactic debate on if Genesis was a weapon or if it was really just a scientific project.
Right. And yeah, I mean, and Shatner plays that really well. Like, you know, he's like, you know, he kind of like stumbles back in his chair and then, like, you know, he has this like really quiet moment and he's like, oh, you Klingon bastards, you killed my son. And it's like, oh man, it's really tough to see. Cause it's like, you know, again, like, you know, Shatner, you know, people always give him crap, but he plays Kirk really well, and especially in that scene, you know, you see like a different side of Kirk, which is, you know, this person that's used to like winning and stuff, you know, he loses really to Kirk in most of the film.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you give Shatner like a good director, and I think Leonard Nimoy is a good director.
Oh yeah, no, Leonard Nimoy is great. Like, you know, Star Trek 4 and 3 are really well directed. You know, his other movies are great as well, you know, because he went on to do, like, you know, to the movie, the baby movie, Three Men and a Baby, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, he did Three Men and a Baby. I don't remember what else he did, but he's like, these Star Trek movies were really good. Like, he did a really good job. So, in that scene, you know, and it's a really intense scene because there's nothing Kirk can do because the transporter, transporter scene, like, it's pretty, like, or the transporters are pretty much, you know, they're like, they're not operational. And so they couldn't beam them up. And also, all three of those characters, you know, Salvik, David, and young Spock, like, they're all like important people. They're not like disposable characters.
Right. No, definitely.
So it was a really well done and intense scene. And yeah, it is really ironic. I do find it a really ironic observation that Spock saved the ship from the Genesis blowing up in Wrath of Khan, but Kirk ultimately destroys it to get back to Genesis.
Yeah, that's a great scene too. This when he self-destructs the Enterprise and he tricks the Klingons, because you know, you go from like him like reeling with a loss, and then, like, you know, he kind of snaps out of it because they have to survive, and then he leads to the self-destruction. And you know, that's a really good scene where they're watching the Enterprise like you know, the debris of it crash into the planet, and they're, you know, because that's the ship that's been with them for like, you know, 40 or something, or 30 years in the show universe. So, you know, it's a it's a great scene. And it's, you know, also ironic because it's like they brought back Spock, but it was at great cost. You know, his son dies, the Enterprise falls, you know, but
yeah, his dad even brings it up, like,
yeah,
And of course, you know, that's a really good moment for Kirk, because he's like, well, I would have lost my soul if I didn't try.
Yeah. So
yeah, all really good stuff around Star Trek 3. I don't know. I mean, I can see like fans feeling cheated, but that's really the only thing I can say to like the criticism.
Yeah, I mean, you don't name a movie Searcher Spock, and then at the end of the movie, well, I guess we didn't find him, you know?
Well, we didn't find him here. We might as well, you know, move on. Yeah. See ya, fellas. Yeah, so I don't know. But, I mean, the movies, the Search for Spock still did well. Like, according to box office results, like, it still did pretty good.
Yeah.
It did make less than the other two movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wrath of Khan made around 90-ish million.
Right.
The first one made about 80 million, and then this one was about 77 million.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Then, so Star Trek, The Voyage Home, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on 3, but...
No, but, I mean, well, one more thought on the Spock. I love how it's not like an automatic, like, for Spock's, you know, resurrection. It's not like a complete, like, utter, like, okay, like, yeah, he's completely back and functional. Like, he's still gotta, like, rework his memory.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, he tells him, he remembers, like, oh, your name's Jim, you know. So, you know, he was the same person, but, you know, just coming back to life had a, effect on him.
So let's get into The Voyage Home,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think this is the best out of the six so far.
Six.
I really dug this movie a lot.
Right. Yeah. I think four people are always like the one with the whales. No, it's a really good movie because if you look at the arc of, well, because 2 to 4 are kind of like a mini trilogy, you know, it's kind of like the movie where, you know, because they, you know, Spock dies, the Enterprise gets taken out. They're pretty much rogue from Starfleet. You know, they're pretty much kind of turn themselves in at the beginning of the movie. And this is kind of the movie where they kind of find, I don't know if I'm looking too much into it, but they kind of find hope again because, you know, they go back and they, you know, pretty much save the planet from this disaster. And, you know, it's like Kirk, and I don't know, he kind of, you know, you see him, I don't know, smile at the end of it. You know, he kind of, I don't know, gets over all the stuff that was, you know, with the sun and everything. Well, not get over, but, you know, just makes him a little more, you know, the person that we remember Kirk as, I guess.
Right. And The Voyage Home, it feels like a Star Trek episode. Like, it feels like a 2-hour. Yeah. Because it, you know, because I mean, it does start like, you know, where the third one left off, and Spock is still trying to find out who he is, and and then when they're, you know, heading home and they're getting ready to, like, you know, turn themselves in and, you know, plea for their, you know, really their lives at this point.
Because they'll be disobeyed orders.
Mm-hmm. Because essentially they, you know, because even the Klingon president or the Klingon ambassador brought up to Starfleet, like, you know, they regardless of what their intentions were, they'd still like killed a bunch of our Klingons. They killed a bunch of our people regardless of what their intentions were. So they were going in, you know, for a, you know, essentially treason.
Yeah, pretty much, because there's still pretty bad relations between the Klingon Empire and Starfleet at that point in time.
Right.
So, yeah. It was a big spot on the Starfleet, you know. So yeah,
yeah. So it really was like this whole probe and the whale scene was essentially, you know, their metaphor, you know, and them going through time travel and working so hard to find the whales and all that. It really was like this metaphor of like their journey of trying to get home, like get home to, you know. You know, and try to earn back the respect and
definitely,
you know, necessary to, or the respect they, you know, they had, you know, before like the whole Wrath of Khan situation. Because really, from the first act of Wrath of Khan, they've been kind of just like doing their thing, and then everything happened in Khan, and then everything happened in third, and so now, you know, they're coming into fourth, you know, as fugitives, and they have to walk and they have to figure out, and they weren't intending on trying to find a way to get, you know, not be not fugitives.
Right.
But, you know, this was their, you know, hope and opportunity to, you know, hopefully, like, maybe clear things up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, it's also kind of, you know, it's them going on this journey to, you know, redeem themselves. But also, you know, it's like probably up until then, it's probably the most fun movie, you know. And, you know, when you think of Star Trek, like, it's, you know, the episodes, they're fun, you know, I mean, they have high ideas, but, you know, it's like a fun series, and it's cool it brought that back to the franchise, because there's, you know, a lot of funny moments, like Kirk and Spock on the bus, and then that dude's playing the loud music, and he just Vulcan nerf pinches him, you know, or, you know, just the humor of, like, them in the 20th century.
The fish out of water humor.
Yeah, it's fun, you know.
It is. It really shows that Leonard Nimoy knows how to do comedy, because the fish out of water humor is so natural and so, like, well executed that it,
right.
it's really hilarious. And, and everything they have to, like, tell everyone about Spock is, you know, completely hilarious.
Yeah, definitely.
But the thing too about The Voyage Home is I don't have that many problems with the movie at all.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, if I had one issue, maybe it would, and this is probably may or may not be nitpicking, but, you know, how did that ship have enough room, like, built in to, like, house, you know, whales in the water?
Well, I think, because it's the Klingon Bird of Prey, and I think probably Scott, I don't know, you know, it's not a standard Enterprise vessel. I think probably Scotty, because he, you know, because he has to get the glass or something or whatever they're trying to get to, like, house the whales. I'm sure he kind of cleared some stuff out to accommodate the whales, so.
Okay.
Know, yeah.
It's just a little, like, okay, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
this could work.
Yeah, that's movie logic sometimes.
Yeah, movie logic.
I was gonna say one more thing about the movie. I also really dig the environmental message in the film, because that, you know, that's cool to see. You know, that they went out of their way to point that, or to make a statement about that, because I think Leonard Nimoy was an environmentalist, and you know, that goes to the kind of the mission of the series, which is to show humanity meeting, you know, getting to this point where they're, you know, above, you know, stuff, you know, above the stuff we have now, you know, like racism or, like, you know, destroying the environment, stuff like that. And they reached a point where they're at this, like, this peak of
utopia. Civilization.
Yeah, utopia, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
And even at their peak of utopia, they're still, like, dealing with the ramifications of the past. Like, they're like, you know, I mean, that's what that whole, you know, probe was there for, is to basically, like, if they couldn't find the whales, they would just, I don't know if they would have destroyed the planet. Again, the logic of the probe is not really quite clear.
I think it was probably would have destroyed it.
Yeah, or at least, like, made it almost like they would have, in a metaphoric way, scorched the earth to try to find the whales.
Yeah, definitely.
If it was done now, it'd be a little softballing.
Mm-hmm.
Because nowadays you would see, like, Kirk and Spock, you know, basically trying to appeal to, like, the government or something of the time to be, like, to pass this act to, you know, to save the whales or something, like,
right?
No, you gotta do this and this and this.
Yeah,
and, like, that would be now kind of what Voyage Home would be. But I mean, for its time, it really was a good idea. It was good intentions, and I really do like the environmental message of the movie. I don't know if any other Star Trek episodes did environmental stuff.
I don't know. Maybe.
But that was if that was their first time or not, it was still, like, a really good approach, like, for Star Trek to do and try to spread their wings and see what they could do with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's a whole different field of sci-fi you can explore.
Of course.
So, do you have any more thoughts on Voyage Home before we get to the Final Frontier?
No, I think I'm good. Yeah, Final Frontier will bum me out, but yeah, let's get on to it.
So, Final Frontier. I'll say this. It's my least favorite of these movies.
Yes.
But it's not as bad.
Yeah. There are some, I'll say this for the movie. There are some really good scenes in that film. The scene with, where Spock and Kirk and Bones are camping is a pretty good scene. You know, they're sinking, row, row, row your boat, which is kind of funny, but they really bond. You know, Kirk, you know, pretty much, you know, tells them, you know, they're the only family he has. You know, the crew on the Enterprise and, you know, how much they mean to him, which is, you know, it's cool because he doesn't really have any family. And, you know, the scene with, you know, Bones and, like, when his dad dies, that's a really emotional scene from DeForest Kelly, you know. You know, there's some really well-acted scenes in that movie. But yeah. and then you watch the rest of the movie.
Yeah, and then, even if you, like, even springboarding off of Bones' dad's death, like, mm-hmm. even Spock's, like, dad, like, sort of in question, like, after his birth, like, him being, like, he's still very human, and it's, like, yeah. and you're just, like, like, mm-hmm. like that, and that's a really good scene, too, so, but, of course, it's kind of, the movie's kind of a bit of an ego trip for mm-hmm. William Shatner, because he's the character that's like, no, I will not be brainwashed. No, I will not be, you know, I won't be the one that loses the fight. Or it's like, it's very much Kirk is the one who's right, and he was always right, and we should never question him.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's the whole crux of the movie, is just, we all know Shatner is a very egocentric person, and so, you know, he would give himself the best material, and I think that's maybe the flaw of the movie. It's too Kirk-centric, and I don't know if you ever saw the Futurama episode with the Star Trek crew, where there's a great line where, like, Leonard Nimoy's telling the Cloud in the episode, like, you know, Melvar, it's like, you have to respect your actors. Like, I respected Bill in Star Trek 4, and I got a great performance out of him, and William Shatner goes, and I got a great, and I respected myself in Star Trek V, and I got a great performance out of myself.
Yeah. I mean, Shatner's performance in 5, like, it's not that bad. It's
no, just, yeah. Yeah.
It's just, you can, like, if you're really paying attention to everything that's going on, and you know that what Shatner is,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of person he is, it very much is like, oh, come on, Shatner, really? Like, yeah. This is so egocentric.
Right. And, you know, just the original series cast members, he really was not, they really didn't like him. Actually, everyone except, like, DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy just hated him. So, like, him, he didn't really give them too much material in 5 to do. So, I mean, I could imagine what that was like for them, because, yeah, they really disliked him for a number of years. Actually, some probably still don't like him as much. Like Takei and probably Nichelle Nichols.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd that you say that, because the chemistry is so good, but
right. Probably the guy that played, James Doohan, who played Scotty, has the best quote about that, where it's like, I really like the character of Kirk, I just didn't like the person that plays him. So
okay. All yeah. right. That's fair. But so the problems I have with it is that it's, you know, it's not only is it Kirk-centric, but the effects are really terrible.
Oh, they're bad. Yeah.
Like, and I think, I don't know if it was before the show started or as we were starting the show, but you brought up that Final Frontier's effects were not as good.
No, they were somewhere finished. It was supposed to go to ILM or some company, and I think they couldn't afford it, so they just gave it to another company, which is, yeah, bad move. Yeah.
Yeah, and it really shows. I mean, every, like, big visual effects shot in the movie that's not, like, something they could have done on set or in camera
right.
looks really bad.
Yeah, especially I think I don't know the what's his the god in the god in the movie, which isn't God. It's I don't know.
Whatever. The goddess Shakari?
Shakara. That looks really bad.
It does. I mean, it really. Even the scene of like when it's revealed that the goddess Shakara isn't Shakara at all. It's, you know, just another evil giant form of being that here's my assumption of what this being does. It essentially draws people to its power because it does have the appearance of a godlike figure.
Right.
But once you bring it closer, it really does, it consumes, you know, the power and it consumes the power of the ship, very much like Ego recently in in Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's, you know, he's just, you know, out to really consume, you know, much of the galaxy that will come across the Great Barrier,
right?
But so he's just luring people in with, you know, this idea of like he's God and he can really, really faint, very much in the same way that the main villain. Not in this one, the Final Frontier, Shariq.
Yeah.
Or not Shariq. The main villain of this movie, the guy that's, you know, searching for God. Like, yeah, that guy, he's, you know, he's been acting the same way, and ultimately his arc is he realizes that of his own faults. Like he realizes right. And that's actually a positive for me. At least the villains have arcs.
Yeah.
Like he's not, and the villain is not just a, you know, I'm just here to destroy the world or a Klingon. It's a character that, you know, thinks he's doing the right thing.
Right.
And ultimately learns that, you know, everything he's been believed was wrong. And now he is going to, you know, essentially sacrifice himself.
Right. Yeah, and that's the problem with that movie. It has so many good ideas, like, you know, Star Trek characters meeting God, essentially, or, like, kind of going with
and
that
confronting faith and religion.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. And then you give it to William Shatner to direct, and it's like, God damn it.
And then Shatner's the, you know, of course, Shatner's the character that's like, well, wait a minute.
Right, yeah.
Wait a minute, so if you can do this, then why can't anyone else do this? And why, like... Like he's the one that's like, I'm gonna question everything. I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be everything.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah.
So yeah, it's not, and that's really the fault of the movie. It's just not that, you know, compelling because we know that Kirk will have every answer.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And it's still like I can't drive this home anymore. The effects in this movie, and this movie had even a bigger budget than almost all, like 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Like it still looks bad. Like it looks like, I mean,
yeah.
2, 3, and 4 look light years better. I mean, this is almost like a Roger Corman production. Like that's how bad it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's just. It's astonishingly bad effects. So I don't think it's a terrible movie. I think the performances are still good. I'm still like, why was Michelle Nichols is Uhura, right?
Uhura. Yeah.
Why was she the one asked to like to serenade people away to be the distraction?
I have no idea.
Years old.
Yeah.
Why, whose idea was that?
I don't know.
Like that was my thing.
Yeah,
I mean she's got a lovely singing voice, but
right.
I don't know, but that's kind of odd. That was an odd decision, Shatner.
I have no idea.
Oh, so is there anything else we can say on Final Frontier?
The less said, the better.
All right. So now we're on the Undiscovered Country. I have not completely finished the movie.
Okay, all right.
Really good.
It's Nicholas Meyer returns, the director of Star Trek: Wrath of Khan, and yeah, it's a really good movie. Not enough people talk about it. Yeah, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it was really fantastic. But it was I mean, it's a really good mystery, and it's a really good, you know, idea, and it really does represent this, like, really what was going on in the time, you know, in the world.
When the wall came down.
The Cold War, and So, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's the themes are really great. You know, it explores, like, what if the wall came down in space, you know, between the Klingon Empire and Starfleet, and it, you know, shows how they have more or less peace with this, with Starfleet, which you see in Next Generation. And yeah, you know, it's cool to see that development in the Star Trek universe. It's a great movie. It's cool also because it's the final movie where you see all the original cast together, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be, that's what's really going to be emotional, or that's what's emotional about the movie, is especially knowing what happens in the next movies. And we won't get to the Next Generation films.
Right.
We'll save them for later.
Yeah.
But knowing what happens to, you know, Kirk and, you know, a lot of the other characters, and especially Star Trek Generations, it's a little bit of a disservice to bring them back, bring them out, you know, for one more time, especially after how well Unexpected Country ends.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good, it's a good send off for them, you know. Yeah, it was a little bit disservice how you see them in Generations, but you know, it's a nice send off. I guess in the real world, because that's the last time you see them all together, you know. And Kirk has a great line at the end, you know, first star the right, staring on till morning. You know, he quotes Peter Pan. Yeah, it's a great scene. You see them all together, you know, and especially now since most of them have passed on, you know.
Yeah, that's really sad. I mean, it wasn't that long later that DeForest Kelly had died and John Barron died, and it is. It's really sad.
Yeah, but you know, it's a great film as well. You know, it has Kirk kind of confronting his feud with the Klingons, you know, because they killed his son, and kind of you know, getting over that for peace in the galaxy, you know.
Right, it's his spiritual journey to, and also the wrap up of the whole series.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's a really good from what I've seen so far, and I know a little bit about the ending, because I mean, it's just the ending that you're referring to, you know, them going towards the sun is, you know, very iconic in film. It's a very iconic film moment.
Yeah, definitely.
So do you have any more words on Undiscovered Country?
No, it's a great film. I think everyone should see it. I won't spoil too much for you, but yeah, you know, it's a great send off for the original cast and crew.
All right. So now that we have gone through all the original series movies, and I'm going to save the Next Generation films for later. But I wanted to ask Eugene, like, where do you want Star Trek to go now? We've seen the Star Trek era. We might could get one more, we might get one more J.J. Abrams-esque
film
Star Trek movie, I guess now with the Kelvin timeline movie, and we're getting Discovery in the fall. So what do you think about the future, and where would you want it to go?
That's really interesting. I'd want to see, you know, at least one more movie with the original crew in the Kelvin timeline. You know, I'd really want them to explore the Klingon war, because, you know, they hinted at that in Into Darkness. I'd want to see that plot line develop, but, I would want to see more of how Beyond handled it, which was, you know, to have fun with the franchise. You know, it's not all dark and gloomy, you know, because I really dug Beyond, Star Trek Beyond. It'd be cool if in the Kelvin timeline you see the Next Generation crew, or if they focus on that in a future movie. So, just want to see, like, more of the universe, more story developments. you know, keep bringing in some new stuff. Don't rehash old plot lines, you know. So, yeah, I hopefully just more hopeful stuff from the franchise, I guess.
Yeah, and I would like to see one more of the Kelvin timeline, especially after Beyond, because I actually liked Beyond more than the other two movies.
Mm-hmm. Beyond is great.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as the TV show that's coming up, I really... Go ahead.
Just I hope they just make it better.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have seen what Brian Fuller would have done.
Oh, yeah.
Because he really is a Trekkie. Or is it... Let me ask you this. Is it Trekkie or Trekker, or is it just both?
It could be both. I think people prefer Trekker.
So, okay.
But, I mean, I don't care. You know, Trekkie's fine.
All right. Well, for Trekkers, he's a real Trekker, so... So it's a shame that they could not have worked it out for him to do it, and they have a good cast, so I hope it's good. I just don't
right. From, and you know some Star Trek.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Some Star Trek series, they're not really good their first season. Like if you look at Next Generation, the first season sucks more or less, and the second season it really comes into its own. So I don't know. For me, it kind of has like this weird Gotham vibe to it, where it's like, you're exploring these things that make them interesting without having the characters be interesting, you know? So.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. And I just don't know. I mean, from everything I've heard about the show, and it's, let's just say I really, really, I can't emphasize enough, I wish they would have worked something out with Fuller.
Yeah, that is what it is.
But yep. So that is it for Star Trek.
Oh.
The original series, or original series cast movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, we did it. So Gene, if you don't have any more final thoughts, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Gene9892. You could also look up some Waffle Press stuff at the Waffle Press. And if you want to look up some short films, We Own Nothing Films on Facebook.
All right. And you can find me at Movie Kale. And then you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic. And you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. And check out the KHZ Network on iTunes and Podbean. And let us know how we're doing. Let us know if you want us to review any movies for the retrospective. And that's it for this week. Next week, we will be talking about E.T. on the retrospective. And then... Either Wednesday or Thursday, we'll publish the Wonder Woman episode.
Woo. Still, I'm seeing that tonight.
All right. Oh, cool. Yeah. But that's it for this week for retrospectives. We will be back.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper, everyone. See you next time.
He's lost. He's alone. And he's 3 million light years from home.